Welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast, the podcast in which Stephen El Trogi, Barnabas Piper, and Ted Kluck cheerfully rant about all the things that don't matter all that much. And now, buckle up for today's episode.
Hey there, welcome back to the Happy Rant Podcast. I'm Ted Kluck, joined, as always, by my good friends, Ronald J. Martin and Barnabas Piper. And guys, the burlap sacks, the shepherd's pouches have all been opened.
They've all been offered
through and offered. They've all been given thanks for. The food has been eaten. The presents have been opened. And what we're experiencing now is that strange time post the holidays that's either filled with, you know, for me, I think a little bit of elation at kind of being done with all the family stuff and being alone again, which I like. Or for maybe for you, Big R, there's a little sense of letdown, of depression. Am I right about that?
Yeah, baby. I mean, I think what we're talking about is this, it's this thing called PCD, post-Christmas depression. It's a real thing. Mm. And, it's something I've been experiencing since I was probably, I think, 6 or 7 years old. Okay. When I went to bed on Christmas night and I started literally crying, and my dad comes in the room and he says, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, Dad, I don't know if you've noticed, but when I wake up in the morning, it's not going to be Christmas anymore."
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And how did your old man deal with that? Dude, your old man, kind of this practical, I think blue collar sort of guy. How did he deal with your delicate emotions in that scenario?
Yeah, he just said, "Well, like I've always told you guys," he said, "if you would just wait till Groundhog's Day, all the Christmas sales would happen, and I would get to buy you twice as many toys. But nobody ever wants to listen to me." That was his response.
What a practical guy, man!
He was a practical guy.
He sounds like he was full of Christmas cheer. I think I like him.
Yeah. No, you would have hated him. He loved Christmas. I hate to say it.
I don't hate people who love Christmas. I just hate certain aspects of the love of Christmas.
Barnabas, tell us about your Christmas. So what did that look like in the Piper household? Like you went to the midnight, you know, 2.5 hour reformed, be miserable service, and That's then right. got back and opened your
And then
your
my children dragged me out of bed. I'm here 3 hours later to go open presents. And no, I love watching my kids open presents. That is my favorite thing about Christmas. And then I am really, really happy when the whole thing is over, because it is exhausting to have children and Christmas. I do wonder if Ronnie's feelings about Christmas have changed some now that he does not have little ones at home. I don't know. I'm not although if he started this whole nonsense depression business at 6 years old,
You see the way he frames that, Ted? Do you see the way he described that?
I wasn't real subtle about it.
Word nonsense to me seems freighted with some just kind of implications that I'm not
very aggressive. Yeah, he's trying to keep his rep, Ted.
I wasn't shooting for subtlety there. That was
he's from Anaheim.
See, when I first heard you say PCD, I assumed it was. There's something that sounds very similar to that, which is like post-concussive disorder, which is it's brain damage caused by repeated concussions, and it's this whole big thing for retired football players. So when you said PCD, I got concerned for a moment, and then you said something about post-Christmas depression, and I was like, oh, this is like suffering from a lack of self-esteem. It's a made-up thing. So
once again, you just wrote me off. I appreciate that.
Now, Ronnie, tell us, since your child is grown and gone and out of the house, what does Christmas look like for the post-Christmas scenario for just the two of you? You know what I mean?
I don't know. You know, it's not that, you know, the kid's out, she's coming back for a few days, but like it hasn't changed that much, because I just man, I love it all. So I just bask in the glow and the glory of it all. I love every minute of it. And when it ends, it's just like kind of returning to like real life. Let me just slide over into Ebenezer Piper's like corner here for 1 second and go, hey, like I get it, man. Christmas is exhausting. There are aspects to it where it's time to get back to real life. Like I'm all for some of those things. Like I'm susceptible to some of those emotions as well. But there's just something magical about Christmas that you don't find at any other time, season, or month of the year.
Ronnie, let me ask you this, man, because I think for me and probably for Pipe too, I mean, there have been years where I felt that way, where like Christmas has felt, you know, magical and relaxing and sort of everything that you want it to be. But there's also been, for me, a lot of years, for a lot of reasons, like Christmases that just haven't delivered. You know what I mean? Yeah. Where the whole thing just kind of feels exhausting and you kind of can't wait for it to be over. And my question to you is, have you ever had that kind of Christmas?
You know, man, I've had those kind of Christmases like threaten my existence. And you know what I do in those moments, man?
What do you do? I need help.
I mean,
he watches It's a Wonderful Life.
I do. I just turn up the Christmas even harder and I push through and I refuse to let it pass me by without any sort of like holly or jolliness. You know
what I realize? I think part of it is for me and maybe it's like this for you, Pipe. Like, I think I just have trouble relaxing. You know what I mean?
That's definitely true. That's
yes. I have trouble like not accomplishing things and not achieving.
Well, Big T, I know you well enough to know that. And yeah. it's a time when you got to be okay with the only thing you are going to accomplish is buying gifts, reading some Christmas fiction, watching some classic Christmas movies, and relaxing with family. I mean, you got to be okay.
Wait. Relaxing with family is like an oxymoron.
That there's the rub. Yeah, it can be.
I mean, I think relaxing is one thing, and that takes a certain amount of effort for me, which is counterintuitive. Relaxing with family is an entirely different set of challenges.
Well, maybe you need to define what that means.
I think you have to manage that, you know. And again, I think when, you know, maybe this is an only child thing, but I think I sort of feel at some level like everyone's happiness is dependent on me, which just kind of makes the whole thing feel like a lot of work. You know what I mean? Because you're trying to like engineer all these conversations and scenarios so that, you know, the parents are happy and the kids are happy and the wife is happy and everybody's having a good time kind of except you, you know?
Yeah. And I would agree. My favorite Christmases or parts of Christmas have been the ones where it's just me and my wife and our daughters, and there's not a big anything. And so it's a certain amount of like peace and quiet, and the kids are happy and they're loving it. But like the whole big Christmas hubbub is exhausting to me. So
Pepper, I'm totally with you on that. I would not dispute that at all. And you got to work hard. You got to work super hard to sort of like make those types of things happen. So to me, Christmas is like, it's a good kind of work to where like what I'm doing the whole time is I'm literally like working overtime to make sure that all the traditions, the things that play into like the greatest Christmas I've ever lived through, like all of those things are being managed and they're being pushed forward. Mm. That's it.
See, and I would take the exact opposite tack, which is strip all of that stuff away. Not all of it. I mean, I'm not anti-nostalgia. I'm not anti-all Christmas movies, only the dumb ones. I'm not anti-all Christmas music. I just want simple is better. Simpler is better. And the more family is involved and the more travel is involved and the more like all of that stuff is involved, the more my stress level goes up because life is insane all the time. And so if I can get a week or two of simple, that's so much better for me.
But see, Piper, I'm totally on board with that.
No, you're talking about managing traditions. That sounds like work.
No. It's making sure that everything you're talking about, which is the simple beauty of Christmas, that stays intact.
Maybe I need to hire you as a Christmas manager.
If you ever want a good Christmas, we need Big R to
come in as a contract employee and manage our Christmases.
Well, I do Christmas consulting, guys. I mean, just send me an email, you know?
Can you share that email address for listeners as well so that they can hit you up for next year?
It's christmasconsulting.com, right? It's just my website. Just go check it out.
Ronald at christmasconsulting.com.
It's sort of Clark Griswold-ish.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I knew you were probably going to go there. No, this is actually serious, and I can actually provide you with a better Christmas. We can talk next year. It's a little too late this year. We can talk about 2016.
That's good, because I think everybody is probably a little tired of talking about Christmas this year, except you, Ronnie, because it does seem to be something that always fuels you as opposed to draining you.
Well you know, I'm going to be tired. So see, this is not me coming in being completely irrational. I'm with you. Make it simple, but you got to work to make it simple, and I think that's the challenge right there.
Wow, there it is. That's profound. That's deep stuff, guys. And you know, while we're talking about work, and while we're talking maybe about people who do a little bit too much work, the question was raised again, I think, by a listener of, you know, why don't we discuss artists and athletes who just hang around too long? We're in the twilight of Kobe Bryant's career here in the NBA. Ronnie, that's a basketball player. That's the one where they dribble the ball and they throw it through a hoop.
That's the orange, the round orange ball.
That's the round orange one. Yeah.
And they wear shorts and tank tops.
Shorts and tank tops. Football people were,
so, like my uncle.
Yes, exactly. But they don't wear socks and loafers with their shorts and tank tops.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right. Peyton Manning, of course, kind of in the twilight of his career here as a Denver Bronco, sort of getting old in front of our eyes. And there are countless other examples, I'm sure, from the world of motocross as well, Big R. But what do we think about this? Because there are people who will, you know, go on shows or be on sports talk radio shows or whatever and just bash these guys and bash these guys for hanging around too long. And how can they do that? And it's ruining the game. And for me, I think because I'm speaking from the perspective of a, you know, an athlete who's probably himself hanging on too long. Like I don't begrudge these guys any minute that they spend in the sport. If the market will bear it, if there's value for you, I say, if you want, hang around as long as you can. Why not? You know, you'll never get another opportunity to play professional basketball or professional football for a living. So why wouldn't you do that for as long as you can? I guess that's my perspective.
I feel like that's true for individual athletes or for individual performers. So like on the artist side of things, like Mick Jagger is old as dirt and looks like a corpse. Billy Joel can't sing anymore. And Paul McCartney, he's part of the Beatles. They were never good. But they can still do what they do as long as people will buy tickets or buy their albums or whatever, sure, because it's not harming anybody. I think in a team sports context, it's different though, because if Peyton Manning can't throw the ball 12-yard out pattern anymore,
he can't this year, let's be honest.
Right. And I mean, and that's a fairly simple route. Like that's not a hard throw for an NFL quarterback. He's hurting his team. And sure, so I understand why he would want to push it, and a supreme athlete, especially somebody who's been as good as he is and been as hyper-focused as he is always going to think, oh, I can bounce back, because they bounced back every other time before. But at some point, he has to look around and have a little bit of self-awareness to go, I'm hurting 52 other guys on this roster who are counting on me to win, and I can't deliver anymore. Kobe Bryant is tanking the Lakers this year. Like, they're an awful team. They would be better without him.
Dude, so yeah, Kobe's doing his typical Kobe thing, which is just, you know, jacking up an ungodly amount of, you know, field goals every night. And what's strange is that, you know, people are filling arenas, you know, along the way to kind of see him do that, you know.
Well, I think they're only filling the arenas now because he announced he's retiring. Because yeah, if he had said he's coming back next year, everybody just would have been like, oh, the Lakers are terrible. Who wants to watch them?
But yeah, since the Lakers are terrible. He's thrown up a bunch of shots and, you know, nobody's playing, you know, real basketball.
I mean, I'm considering driving. So the closest NBA team to us is in Memphis. I'm considering driving to Memphis to see them play the Grizzlies at the last game there, because I've never seen Kobe play in person. But part of me is like, but that wouldn't really be seeing Kobe play in person. That would be seeing a shell of an old Kobe play for 14 minutes and go 2 out of 8 from the field. Like, that doesn't sound like a ton of fun, except to tell my kids I did it.
Still, at some level, would be cool though. I'm fascinated, and Big R, we've talked about this, man. One of the most interesting scenarios in life to me is the guy on his way down. You know,
the has been the guy
who was the, you know, the megawatt star who's now like crested and is falling. I think it's why I love the movie Life Aquatic so much, the Wes Anderson movie with Bill Murray in it, because he plays that kind of character so well, and I find it fascinating. You're an artist, you're a musician, now an author. What's your take on this?
I don't know. You know, it's so funny because I just, you know, it doesn't. I'm not really one of these guys that's angry when guys are hanging on too long. I just what little I know about what it must be like, you know, to sort of attain those levels of celebrity and stardom. I mean, that's really what it is, isn't it? At the end of the day, man, these dudes just, man, they want to hear people like, you know, screaming their name. They right. need that spotlight. I mean, that's what's killing them. It's not that they probably even still want to sing or play basketball or football. It's just that they need that adulation. And I think that's the hardest thing to give up at the end of the day. I mean, especially when you can – I mean, and it's really hard. Like, I think Piper brought up a good point. It's really hard to compare, like, musicians with, like, athletes, because musicians can continue to excel, even though few do, even though few write the songs they wrote in their heyday. they can actually still, you know, be improving their craft. Whereas an athlete, I mean, you have a sell-by date, and then once that's up, you're done. But right. I think what's fascinating about it is that it's just a drug. And I think the drug is the spotlight, it's the adulation, it's being adored by fans. That's the hardest thing in the world to give up. It's not bouncing the ball. It's not even strumming the guitar or any of that to me. It's giving up that acclaim. I think that's almost impossible for anybody to do. I mean, we can even – let's bounce it more into like our world here when you talk about like pastors that should have retired like 10 years ago. And it's like why are you doing – like you're almost killing the church. But it's almost like you can't imagine a Sunday when you're not up there preaching, you know?
Yeah. I wonder how much of it – I mean, you mentioned adulation. I feel like that has to be very closely tied to identity, how you view yourself. I am not me without this thing. So, right. A pastor has to preach on Sunday or else who are they?
I don't have any reason to live.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, and but that's part of the reason why I think it's so fascinating when people do it well. So you look at let's go back to older athletes. Like my favorite basketball player of all time is Kevin Garnett. He is the same age as Kobe Bryant. Came into the league 1 year before him.
Yeah.
And he now plays 14, 15 minutes a night. He's sort of a bit player for a
the pros
young team.
Pro man, the consummate role player.
Yeah, and he's a role player and he's a role model. So he's there to help the Timberwolves younger players kind of learn the game. He's sort of a coach on the court. And right. He transitioned to that really a year or two ago. He kind of made the shift from real NBA player to sort of this coach on the court. And then you get somebody like Barry Sanders back in the day who just left the game when he was the best running back in the sport. And he just said, right. I think it's the time for me to step away before he hit a downhill slide. And those two both look better. Like they play better.
Absolutely.
But
they do. And
are they better decisions? I don't know.
Well, with Barry, I think there was the sense that for whatever reason, it wasn't hard for him to step away. Like he didn't need it in the way that Ronnie described. Like, and he was a guy who to me never seemed to.
He never sought the spotlight.
Yeah, he never got off in the spotlight and the adulation and all those things that like most of us would truly be into. So, yeah, I mean, for him to walk away, it was a head scratcher. People were, people thought like you can break every significant rushing record in the books, but you're walking away. And I think he truly didn't care about that stuff.
It's a personality thing too, isn't
yeah.
it?
I yeah, mean, for
some
him,
people just don't. Yeah.
No, he didn't need it. And to be that kind of person. Like I wish I didn't need to be doing this podcast when I'm 65. But you know what? Here I will be.
Well,
in front of my computer, talking into my blue snowball microphone and waiting to have dinner at 4 o'clock. Because I need
But tapioca pudding is coming at 7, so hang in there.
Exactly. Exactly. I'll be sad. I'll be the Kobe Bryant of podcasting.
That's a really sad thought.
You could be the Bernie. Yeah, you could. Yeah, or, yeah. You could be like Al Trogi and get out before all the
dude.
All the fame
really. All kidding aside, Al Trogs was kind of the Barry Sanders of.
That's what I mean.
He said to himself, "I've been to the mountaintop. I've experienced all that this can give me, and I'm walking away."
Given how much he texts us, he might be more like the Michael Jordan. And that's not to say his previous peak, but more like his potential to try to come back in a different form and probably for a different team.
His Washington Wizards, like Charlotte Bobcats years.
Yeah. He's going to try to own a podcast network someday and run it into the ground because he doesn't know how to do such things, kind of like Michael Jordan.
I love it, man. Or he could be the Isaiah Thomas of sort of the podcasting industry.
MacArthur,
which is even worse.
MacArthur is he's Kobe Bryant-esque.
Yeah, he is kind of Kobe-esque, isn't he?
I mean,
that's fascinating.
And maybe it's a Southern California thing. Who knows?
It could be, man. The lights are bright there.
That's right. It's hard to walk away from those things.
Well, guys, speaking of walking away from things, we are approaching the new year. New Year's is a time for resolutions. New Year's resolutions are a thing that people talk about. People who aren't me. I guess I don't care. And I never really have, but I wondered about your take on resolutions. Are you New Year's resolutions people? Do you do this? Do you have this? And for me, let me give the caveat. I mean, I guess mine are always the same in the sense that, I mean, all kidding aside here, like I want to spend more time in the Word. I want to be a better father. I want to, continue to kind of mortify the sins that that very John Owen-y from year to year. No, it's true, man. I mean, it's.
I just like the word mortify. I funny story about mortifying sin.
Yeah, yeah.
Pardon the interruption. I had to read the book, The Mortification of Sin, as a punishment for lying to my dad when I was in high school. So,
which is just a brutal book to read.
So you said that in complete sincerity, and I can't hear that phrase mortification of sin and take it seriously at this point. I think it's the opposite effect of what my dad was going for.
Dude, it was.
I feel like I have 9 people I want to go tell that story to right now.
Well, that is what Twitter is for.
All of whom are making their like middle schoolers read John Owen.
Yeah, you know? No, it is not a great way to A, make your kids fall in love with Puritan writers, or B, convince them that mortifying sin is a very essential thing. I learned that a few years later, but sorry, you said the phrase, and I had a bit of a Vietnam-like flashback.
That's up there with the shepherd's pouch for me. I'm not going to lie.
It really is. What about a shepherd's pouch with the mortification of sin in the pouch?
I gave my 57 cents, and that's what I got in return.
Yeah, Reformed people, there's the ultimate gift on
Mom.
Christmas. So for Christmas 2016, shepherd's pouch, mortification of sin. There it is.
So you were saying about you always have sort of the same ones, and they're about growing, is what you were saying before.
I guess they're not about like dieting. Like I'm past all that. I still work out. I work out all the time, so it's not that. So yeah, I mean there's really nothing. There's nothing there for me. I guess I could say like drink less coffee or whatever. But you know what? I'm not really.
But then you'd be miserable. So why do that?
I would exactly. Like I want what I want. So what about you guys, man? Resolutions?
I feel like New Year's resolutions have gotten to the point now, like just that phrase, the concept of them, that it's almost more ironic than it is real.
Yeah.
I do think that the New Year is a great time for sort of the taking stock of where you are and thinking about ways you'd like to improve. And which is exactly what New Year's resolutions are. It's just a really verbose way of saying the exact same thing. But I feel like that phrase can't be taken seriously.
It's always related to doing something better physically for yourself.
You get a gym membership. I mean, gym memberships spike some ungodly percentage in January, and like attendance at them plummets by January 20th or something like that. And so that's what I think of when I think New Year's resolution. I do, however, try to set goals, which are probably the same thing. But I had somebody give me a piece of advice a few years ago that I've tried to put into practice, which is set measurable goals. So like read the word more is not something that you can easily measure. Whereas if you say something like, I don't know, memorize one verse a month or one verse a week, you can look back and go, well, there's 52 weeks and I memorized 35 verses. So I didn't reach my goal, but that's 35 more verses than I memorized the year before. Or, run a 5K. Well, if I haven't done that before, then there's sort of a fitness goal implied in that, but it's these measurable things. And so I do try to make a list of those and periodically check back on them throughout the year to be like, how am I doing? Am I – can remember what they are? Am I sticking with this? And some of them are, financial goals, save a certain amount of money. So I don't do New Year's resolutions in that sort of like, I'm going to get a gym membership and get in shape, that kind of thing. But try to set a handful, maybe 10 or 12 goals for the year in different areas that I can actually achieve, like real measurable things so that I can say – in these areas of my life, there was measurable improvement or progress.
There you go, Big R.
Yeah, no, I like that, man. I'm a little like that. I always feel like what I'm trying to do, because I don't do the physical route too much either. I'm always trying to get rid of things when I go into the new year. So I always feel like there's things that are dragging me down, and I always feel like, man, if I need to just stop putting much time and energy and importance on these particular things that I'm spending time on or that I'm engaging in. And I'm always thinking like, can I let these things go? And how do I let those things go? How do I simplify? I'm just always trying to simplify. So I'm doing that throughout the entirety of the year. But I feel like as soon as January 1 comes, man, I start making that mental list, or I even write it down, because I just want to lean it out. I literally just want to lean out my life. So
it's like a mental spring cleaning, except it's the dead of winter.
Exactly. And that's how it feels to me, because I just feel like there's dead weight, and I'm always trying to get rid of that dead weight,
What are examples of some of those things? Not to get overly invasive, but just like, just in case there are listeners who are thinking, what are helpful ways to do this? Because I think a lot of people get really frustrated with New Year's resolutions. They've done the same kinds of things. They've read the New Year, New Year stuff, New You stuff. You know, they make out a list of stuff that they can't really accomplish, or it's not measurable, or they forget about it. So, like, what are some of those things you do that are like, okay, this is something I want to do less of, or something I want to clean out in terms of busyness or schedule or whatever?
Yeah, well, because I think what everybody does with New Year's is they try to add things. Uh-huh. And I almost think that's why it doesn't work, because technically with most people, they have too many things. And so what you should be looking at is trying to remove some things to accentuate the things that you actually in your mind, at least, you place more importance on, but you don't find that you have the time to invest. So for me, it would be like, you know, if for instance, this year I had a couple of musical projects that took a little too much time. So I'm going into 2016 saying, look, at this place in my life with the things that I'm doing, do I just need to drop any musical project going into 2016? And that'll create the space to do the things that I actually have the desire to spend more time on. So it's things like that for me.
That makes sense. I also think most people use New Year's as a time to set goals. They get discouraged when they don't reach them, and then they never set another goal until the next year.
Right, and, right. Yeah. And so February through December, goals have ended.
Yeah. So like by December, you're just sort of like a lumpy waste who's not using their time, money, or energy very well, because you stopped setting goals 11 and a half months prior. I feel like goals are the kind of things you set all the time. So if you get to the point where your life is just frantic,
we should almost start like a new – we should like there should almost be somebody that comes up with something that starts February 1st.
That's right.
Which is sort of your post-New Year's resolution goals kind of a thing.
That's right. It's like the recovering resolutions or something like that.
Recovering
resolutions. Wow, which is such a how about this, fellas? Title.
I know. Resolutions. Isn't that great?
Redeeming,
I mean,
this resolutions.
Mortifying old resolutions. I don't know. I feel like if in the middle of March – you feel like you're fat, figure out how to start a reasonable exercise routine. You know, if in June you never have enough time with your kids, like sit down and take stock and figure out how do I carve out a couple evenings a week to play with them or whatever. I mean, these are not New Year's resolutions. These are just like reasonable decisions about time and energy management.
Yeah, because they should just be called old year resolutions.
Right.
That way there's not that pressure of it being new and something you have to amount and add up to. So I advocate for us at the Happy Rant old year resolutions this year.
Oh, I love it, man.
Maybe we should do a recovering resolutions episode in a month or so, just to see what have we already failed to do this year and what can we feel bad about and then get better at.
Guys, I want to take the titles of some of our books and add the word resolution in some of them, and that'll be a way for us to encourage one another and our listeners.
Well, finding resolutions in the dark.
Help my resolutions.
The pastor's kid resolution actually sounds like a sequel. It sort of sounds like the study guide at company thing. You know,
yeah, I think we're looking at a part two now, Piper. Yeah. I mean, now we just gave you an idea.
If only I had anything else to say on the subject. I wrote it the first time.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, gentlemen, we have done what we always do on this program, which is wandering to and fro. So thank you for that, for the wandering. Thanks as well to our boys at Resonate Recordings, who they do some stuff with these files after we send them their way, and it makes it sound good. So thanks for that, gentlemen. And until next time, Rachel the Hell Evans.
Well, the physician comes in and says, tells this lovely couple, hey, your son's not going to make it, but there's a young girl here in the hospital who just delivered a baby girl, and she's given her up. She's going to leave her here. Do you want her instead?
That was chart topper Ryan Stevenson sharing a personal testimony on The Walk, a podcast for worshipers. Join us weekly to hear artists, songwriters, worship leaders, filmmakers, and other creatives tell their stories in the form of a devotional. The Walk can be found on lifeaudio.com or your favorite podcast platform.